Regina Resnick is proving that it is possible for an opera star to give a thrilling performance in a Broadway show. For over 40 years, Resnick was a member of the Metropolitan Opera and sang in many of Europe's finest opera houses. She is now co-starring in the Broadway revival of Cabaret, the musical set in Germany at the dawn of Hitler's rise to power. The revival stars Joel Grey, who reprises the role that he played in the original Broadway production and in the film. Resnick plays Fräulein Schneider, a Gentile woman who runs a boarding house and falls in love with her Jewish boarder. In the original Broadway production, Fräulein Schneider was played by Lotte Lenya. The role was cut from the film version of Cabaret. I spoke to Regina Resnick from the NPR Bureau in New York. As of yet, there is no cast album of the revival of Cabaret, but I want you to hear this 1961 recording of Regina Resnick singing an aria from Carmen. Carmen is one of the roles she is best known for in the opera world. Regina Resnick, I want to welcome you to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Can I ask you to compare the physical sensation of singing opera and doing the kind of singing you're doing now on Broadway?
Well, it's a different technique. It's another way to reach the audience. It's a change of voice. It's a, how can I explain, cutting back your instrument to suit the size of a theater, to suit the style of the music that you're singing, and then to realize, of course, that you're being mic'd, and to give the amount that you really think will equalize yourself with the other members of the show. It's both technical and artistic, and certainly vocal. I changed an entire way of singing in order to do Cabaret, which had nothing to do with my operatic voice. Actually, I hardly use, with the exception of some sounds, I hardly ever use the sounds that people had heard me sing for 40 years.
Are you singing from a different part of your body?
Oh, no. The vocal cords are the same. The throat is the same. The body is the same. The technique is the same.
Is the singing you're doing in Cabaret closer to your speaking range?
Actually, the good part of the part and the way John Kander and I organized the songs is that I'm particularly pleased that when I sing, I sound the way I speak. And the voices are very close. My speaking voice and the singing voice in Cabaret are quite close. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the opera, you never really would understand what my speaking voice was like unless I had lines to speak, which I did have in the opera, by the way. There was I sang Orlovsky in the Fledermaus, where I tried to approximate my speaking voice to my singing voice, even though the part lay higher than my own speaking voice. And then I sang The Daughter of the Regiment, in which I had an entire act of French spoken dialogue, really a la Comédie Française, in which I tried to approximate my speaking voice also to match my singing voice. Aside from that, I never had the challenge because actually nobody heard me speak on the operatic stage. They heard me only sing.
That's interesting. You had been retired from opera for a few years before you were called on to do Cabaret.
I was never retired from anything. I never used the word retired.
Why not?
Well, I never made any farewells. I never said I wasn't going to do anything anymore. I didn't say this was finished, the book was closed. I felt that I was doing an ongoing life, which was artistic, and decided that the operatic stage that I had known possibly since the war, the finest years that the operatic world and the concert world knew, and that it was the correct moment to withdraw from certain parts, which I had done over a period of 4 or 5 years, leaving certain parts wide open, things I knew I could sing the rest of my life if I were called on to do so. As a matter of fact, Here's an interesting little tidbit. As I started working on Cabaret with Hal Prince last January, he asked me if in the season 88-89 would I like to sing Peak Dom if he directed it. So here we were talking about possibly going back to the opera with Hal Prince. Oh. You see, so I didn't really retire. I decided that after 40 or 41 years on the operatic stage, there were other worlds to conquer. And so I announced no retirement, no farewells, and just put myself in quasi-limbo. Turned out to be very busy producing a film, which you may know about,
right,
which was shown on PBS called The Ghetto of Venice, and going into another project, and then busying myself a great deal for almost 2 years with young talented singers in various master seminars for singing, like the Mozarteum in Salzburg, the Royal Conservatory in Canada, etc.
You didn't audition for Cabaret. You were called. How did that happen?
Well, I did not audition. I did read for Hal Prince. I really do not know exactly the story in the ensuing weeks just before I was called, but I do understand that a great many actresses, including some very fine names, Broadway names, read for the part. What I heard was that they couldn't sing, and that many good readings were there, but there was no question about voice. There was just no one who could sing the part. And then the Hal Prince office called the Kurt Weill Foundation, which is a highly interesting organization that was created by the last will and testament of Lotta Lenya in honor of Kurt Weill, the director of which is Lise Simonette, with whom I had a lovely conversation just yesterday. She said to Ruth Mitchell, if I were to cast the part today, there really is only one person. I haven't got a clue as to whether she's interested, so why don't you call her? And so Ruth Mitchell, who is Hal Prince's right arm, called me and said, would you be interested, and would you come, and would you read, and would you look at the music? I was rather taken aback by it. It came as a complete surprise. I met Hal. I read for 5 minutes. I never sang for them, and the rest was up to me.
What did you read? As you pointed out, you weren't very used to doing lines on stage.
I had never read an audition. I had never had a script in my hand where I had to sit with the director and just off the top of my head think what the scene was like without someone telling me what it was all about. I read through the script the night before, and I knew that the next day they'd say turn to page 7, because I heard that that's the kind of thing one does with actresses. So I turned to page 7 and read, and that was it.
What was the passage that you read? Do you remember?
The very, very first entrance of Schneider, when she's selling the room to Mr. Bradshaw.
There were probably a lot of other things you had to get used to performing on Broadway, things that you weren't used to from the opera world. Even Broadway customs. Were there Broadway customs that you had to get acquainted with?
I don't think so. Customs in what sense?
Well, I don't know. It just seems to me that the world of Broadway has its whole set of rules by which they operate. That's probably pretty different from the world of opera. Even the way you take bows is probably different on Broadway.
Well, the bows are arranged, in any case, by the director, whatever performance you do, whether it's the operatic stage or whether it's the Broadway stage. The big concerted bow, which I call the company bow, is traditional everywhere, and then solo bows. So the way the director chooses to do it is not a different custom. It's just the way it's chosen to be done. Very often in the opera, we also took our bows in the set. But traditionally, they were usually done in front of the gold curtain. The solo bows, the curtain came down, and then the stars came before what we called the bow curtain, or the solo curtain, or the gold curtain, whatever it was. But that's not so terribly different. The only thing that I find, which is enormously taxing and truly different, are the rigors of the schedule. Because even at the maximum and at the very outside, I wouldn't sing more than 3 times a week, and that was quite taxing in the repertory which I did. I mean, if people who were singing secondary parts or walk-on parts in the opera were called on to do truly almost what Broadway people do. They are on practically every night or 4 or 5 times a week or 6 times a week. With the repertory that I sang, it was not even possible to sing more than 2 Carmens and 1 Elektra in 1 week. And even that was unusual. 2 times a week was much more the norm of the very big operas which I sang.
In your role in Cabaret, you play a Gentile woman who runs a boarding house and falls in love with and is ready to marry one of her boarders, who is a Jewish man.
Correct.
And then as the Nazis are gaining power, she decides this is not a good idea for her to marry the Jewish man. And she sings a song basically telling him so. What did you have in your background that you could draw on to sympathize with this woman who is turning aside her lover because he is Jewish?
Good question. And you hit something which really I haven't publicized too much. I think I really spoke to only one journalist about it. It was the following. Actually, she doesn't turn her back on anything. She is a pragmatic person who says in her song and in her big speech, which is really the major dramatic speech of the piece at the very end, her farewell, she tells why she has survived and how she has fought to survive alone, and that living alone is a habit that's hard to change, and that she still wants to survive and has chosen what she thinks would be the safe way for her to survive and still live alone. The relation to me was very strange because some years ago, I would say 8 years ago, I had the occasion to visit the Soviet Union, and being of Jewish origin, myself and my entire family that was left in the Soviet Union, the majority of whom are still there, because my father and mother were the only two of their families that came out. And as my father's family was practically entirely exterminated by Hitler's march on the Eastern Front into the Ukraine, and my mother's family suffered a great deal, many of them never did get away or come back because they had been sent to other cities to relive their lives, etc. One cousin, actually my father's nephew, I found in the Soviet Union. And we had a very interesting meeting, a supper, when I was there. And my husband and I were doing Falstaff in Warsaw as a production for the Grand Opera in Warsaw. And we had the opportunity to fly into Soviet Russia for 10 days. And I met him, and this is long before Cabaret, but actually at supper he almost gave me word for word Schneider's speech. And I said to him, Pyotr, which is Russian for Peter, don't you want to come out and start a new life? And he said the following to me. You see your aunt sitting there, your father's sister? She's old and sick. And in her childhood, she could never go to school, being Jewish, and neither did your father. Now she's being taken care of by the government, and her illness is being cured, and she will live her life out without my worrying about her old age and whether she'll be taken care of. I have a 12-year-old son who has an education free. I'm a hairdresser at the Bolshoi. I'm 54 years old. My wife is 55 years old. She's the foreman of a Klieg-like factory that manufactures a lot of the products for the Bolshoi. Soon she will be able to retire, take care of our son, and do the things she wants. What choice do I have? Said he to me. These are Schneider's words. In her speech, she said, after all, in the end, what choice do I have? What he was saying to me is that at my point in my life, if I make a change, I really do not know what will happen to me. So I asked him, what is his liberty worth as Jew or as a human being? He said, we all make sacrifices. Deep in my heart, I know what I am. My son will know what he is. And we will make the accommodation to survive because we've grown up in a certain way that has given us more than we ever had and more than our parents ever had.
You think it would have been hard for you to understand your character if you hadn't heard him say those words?
No, not really. I have to tell you another reason why this is going to sound a little perfunctory after this more profound speech that I told you about my cousin in the Soviet Union. An actor or an actress does not have to relate to what she does. Many people became astounded that they found me as an actress in cabaret, but I prided myself my entire life on being an actress on the operatic stage. The difference being that I used my operatic voice as a singing voice to portray what I did, but what did I have to do with Clytemnestra, with which I became identified? My name, Regina, is Queen, and Reznik in Russian is a butcher. And so when I played Clytemnestra, I was the Queen Butcher. So if you want to call that a relationship to a part, the woman who axed her husband in the bathtub in the great trilogy of Sophocles, what did I have to do with Carmen? Really, I had almost nothing to do with anything I ever sang. What I had to do with it is that I was doing my craft.
Right, acting.
And my
right.
trade, acting. So therefore, the question that my cousin Peter did give me a little bit of insight into survival of why people stay and don't go was, let us say, an insight. But I don't think it would have made me play Schneider any differently. I saw perhaps the plight of the person who wanted to survive and make a choice a little more poignantly. But I must say the way Kander and Ebb and Joe Masteroff wrote it, the part is so marvelously written. And her part especially is so succinct. I don't think there's a word or a note in it that's too much. They really didn't give me such a difficult task, I must say.
Well, I want to speak with you more about your acting and your singing. But first we're going to take a short break. My guest is Regina Reznik, who is performing on Broadway in the revival of Cabaret. For over 40 years, she sang on the operatic stage. We'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Regina Reznik, and I want to play for you another one of her recordings. This was recorded in 1961, and she's performing Princess Eboli's aria from Don Carlos. Listening to the voice of my guest, Regina Reznik. Let's talk about your singing. Something happened in your career that I think is really most unusual for a singer. You shifted in your career from being a soprano to being a mezzo-soprano. Did your voice physically change? Did your voice shift?
Well, this has always been a point of contention as to whether I was really born with this sound, except that it didn't come out until I was past 30 years of age. I had an unusually wide range as a youngster, already at perhaps at 12 years of age. And when I started as a soprano, the extension was so big that it wasn't difficult for me to be classified as a dramatic soprano. But there was an interesting observation made by several conductors. When I sang Fidelio at the Met with Bruno Walter, I was barely 21, and the critics the next day said, we don't know whether this is... No, they said, we do know it's an enormous talent. We cannot tell yet whether this is a soprano with a tremendous bottom or whether this is a mezzo-soprano with a very big top. Time will tell. Well, I'd sung 14 years as a soprano, and my voice kept getting darker and darker and darker. And I had to make a decision as to where the sound really lay. And I took an experimental year to do it, and there was no question that the voice dropped in that experiment, rethinking everything about singing and a completely new way of singing with another teacher, that the voice, what came out of the bottom of the barrel was like wine that was lying there for many years being unused. And suddenly the high part of the voice became even freer because I was not taxing the upper part of the voice. I was using the middle and lower part of the voice, which was, well, it's the sound you're actually listening to right now. It's the speaking voice I've always had. But I had, of course, the benefit of having two careers. Several conductors, notably Clemens Krauss, in Bayreuth, when I was singing Sieglinde, said that he thought I was a mezzo and told that to Wieland Wagner. Much earlier than that, much, much earlier than that, in a very short conversation with one of the great giants of all time, Otto Klemperer, he said to me quietly one day, "I wouldn't be surprised that if you change repertory someday." Now, the story of Otto Klemperer is interesting because, as you know, my colleague and partner, Mr. Schultz, is his son, Werner Klemperer.
Right, your partner in cabaret.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you, when you started thinking that maybe you were really now a mezzo instead of a soprano, was that upsetting for a while?
It was a crisis.
I'll bet.
I think I wept for a year, then cleansed my eyes in the morning and started singing again, not because I didn't think I could conquer it or that it wasn't so. I really believed it. It's only that in the 14 years, I had started when I was 18, and we were now talking about being 30, 31, 32 years of age. At this point, thinking about giving up 40 parts that I had sung, which is more than a lifetime's work, done in 14 years, and keeping only one role, Carmen, which I had already sung as a soprano, was catastrophic in my head that in the next 15 years, I would not only double or triple my repertory, but go through a period of learning where I had really thought deep in my heart that maybe 50% of what I had already learned would serve me the rest of my life. And I found myself in new studies for the next 20 years. And in the end, toward the close of the operatic chapter of my career, I had sung 81 parts.
What are the differences in the kind of roles you end up singing when you're a mezzo from what you'd sing as a soprano?
Well, as a soprano, I sang mostly only the heroines. And they were the heavies in any case, the Toscas and the Fidelios and the Santuzzas. But as a mezzo, I think that the mezzo-soprano repertory really gave me the opportunity to exploit everything I wanted to do as an actress on stage. And the gamut was so great, from Carmen to Delilah to Frau Neuschatten to the glamorous Eboli to Clytemnestra to Herodias to the Frau Neuschatten to all of the Wagnerian parts and then to high comedy like Mistress Quickly in Falstaff to doing a male role like Orlovsky in Fledermaus to then doing one of the great challenges on the operatic stage, the role of Pique Dame. The Queen of Spades is probably one of the great challenges of all time for any actress, whether she sings or speaks. And if she has to sing and does sing well, I think the challenge is twice as great.
You explained to us early on that you feel that you never really retired from opera, but you did go through a period of not singing very much, on the other hand.
Several years.
When you weren't singing a lot, did you still go to the opera? I know a lot of people go through a period of withdrawal when they stop or temporarily stop doing what they've done for many years.
Well, I have to tell you that I never had time to go to the opera when I was singing. I was on the other side of the footlights most of the time. It was very rare that I was in the public. Very. I was just too busy. And even in those years, in the very productive years when I was on the stage, which was 40 years, when I did go to the opera, it was to hear a colleague I adored, an opera I may never hear again, to see a production done by a great stage director from whom I could learn, In other words, I went because I wanted to, not because I was a regular opera goer. I was not. I was an opera singer, not a goer. I was a theater goer. I went to see the things that would bring me other facets of my profession. After I left the operatic stage, which was a year after the centennial of the Met, 1984, I must tell you that I went to the opera only to hear a particular person that I might not have heard in the role, or a conductor that I wanted to hear or know, a piece I knew I may never see again. And one of the reasons is that, of course, this sounds a little bit, it always sounds like sour grapes when somebody who's not practicing in the profession says, but it was so much better then, and it's not like that now. There's an excellent critic these days whose name is Will Crutchfield, whom I admire very, very much and whom I read, who knows a great deal about singing. And he has given me leave to speak. He finally allowed me to release some of the pent-up feelings I had about what he called burnout at the opera. And I am so sickened and so discouraged by the way the operatic voice is now being used as an industry. And that's one of the reasons I don't go so much anymore. Well, now, of course, I'm completely tied into cabaret, and my going anywhere is going to my dressing room. And the one thing I wanted to say, if we have a few seconds left.
We have 2 seconds left, honestly.
2 seconds left is to say that the difference between the opera and Broadway is that I have met in this company probably a group of people that have become one of the most endearing ensembles I have ever worked with in my life. The singers, the dancers, all my colleagues, and the stars.
That's wonderful to hear, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Regina Resnick is now performing in the Broadway revival of Cabaret. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.